Welcome to our episode of Revenue Chat. Today, best-selling author Mitch Russo joins us. His latest book, The Invisible Organization, How Ingenious CEOs Are Creating Thriving Virtual Companies, became an instant bestseller on Amazon across several categories. Mitch says, go invisible and profit, and discusses the new business breakthrough with us next on Revenue Chat. Hi, everyone. This is Tony D'Urso with Revenue Chat. With us, we have Mitch Russo, who says, go invisible and profit. He co-founded TimeSlips Corp, which grew to become the largest time-tracking software company in the world before it was sold in 1998. Then, Mitch went to join longtime friend Chet Holmes as president, later to join forces with Tony Robbins, and together created Business Breakthroughs International with nearly 300 people and about $25 million in sales. In 2015, Mitch released his book, The Invisible Organization, How Ingenious CEOs Are Creating Thriving Virtual Companies, which is the CEO's guide to transitioning a traditional brick-and-mortar company into a fully virtual organization. Well, it became an instant bestseller on Amazon across several categories. Mitch wants to change the world by helping more people work from home, save money, and eliminate that, what he calls that soul-sucking commute to work. And of course, make businesses more profitable while doing so. I love that. His website is theinvisibleorganization.com. All right. Mitch is going to give us the lowdown on the new business breakthrough. Let's bring him on. Hello, Mitch. How are you?
Hey, Tony. How are you? I'm great. Thanks for inviting me on your show.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. I'm very grateful to have you on your show. And I'm always honored. All my guests are very unique, and you are a star. So thank you very much for coming on.
My pleasure.
All right. Now, Mitch, I mentioned a little bit about you in this intro, and perhaps you'd like to fill us in a little more on your roots and how you became an expert in the field. So please tell us, how did it all start for you?
Well, you know, it's funny. I had a software company early on, and before that, I did various other things. I worked for companies and observed how companies operate. And I think for me, the driving factor was really just knowing that with the tools that I've learned, I was able to make a difference in the world. But, you know, it goes back even further than that. Can I tell you that story?
I would love to hear it, please.
Okay. Well, you know, I think for most of us, you know, the way we are is shaped by our childhood, you know, and probably the same for me too. I mean, I grew up in a section of Brooklyn, New York. It's called Manhattan Beach. Not many people have heard of it. It was really kind of separate from the rest of the city. And, you know, it was a beautiful suburb. My folks were lucky enough to get a house in this little area, and we lived down the street from the beach, and I walked to public school every day. It was just a block away, you know. But here's the key. You know, I really didn't fit well into school. For me, something was really missing, you know. In fact, something was invisible.
I know that story.
I bet you do. A lot of us do. I don't know about you, but I felt like an outcast most of the time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a jock. I wasn't very social. And truthfully, I was alone a lot. And then, boy, the guitar changed my life. You know, I started to play the guitar. I learned to play. And all of a sudden, people started to notice me, and I started to become visible. So,
that's very cool.
You know, yeah, this was in high school, and beyond just playing the guitar, you know, for me it was going to cost money to start a band, but it required some problem solving along the way, and that's where I discovered some of the basic laws of business that stayed with me throughout all the time that I grew up and throughout the time that I started my software company, and those became the seed
that, because I'm very curious, as I'm sure our listeners are. So that's what caused you to write The Invisible Organization, was your business roots? Perhaps you could kind of clarify that a little bit.
Sure. So what I really mean by that is that, you know, when I was in a band, I had to set up a band, and I was a kid. And let's face it, back then, you know, there was a lot of, it was the 60s, you know, and a lot of kids were experimenting and getting stoned and all that. And so, and some of my friends were too, some of the folks in my band were too. So I had to actually put some structure in place or else we would never have survived. And so I started to create, and I didn't know I was doing this at the time, Tony. I was just really just trying to build a band. And I realized that unless we were going to be disciplined, we could never practice. In fact, we all liked to practice when we used to get high. We used to smoke pot and we'd get high and we'd practice. And it sounded great while we were practicing. But, you know, I recorded it once and it sounded terrible once we played the recording back. So I had to basically put a law in place with the band and say, look, and this, by the way, these became the lessons for me, the lessons of business. And, yeah, it all started back here. And that lesson back then was be disciplined with yourself and with your team, even if they don't like it. In the end, it will pay off big time, and the team will respect you for it. And that lesson came from having to force everybody to show up at band practice completely sober and just work on getting our music done right, you know? And so all these lessons evolved. It was part of the process for me of trying to get a – now this was not just a band. It was a small business, you know. So when we would go out and play, we would play what we liked. And truthfully, the first couple of times that we went out to play, it wasn't that great of a reception. We didn't do that well. And I, you know, back on band practice day, I got the band back together and I said, look – if we're going to do well, we have to learn our songs really, really well. And that means we have to practice. And I mean that I want to practice one song every week. And we used to have band practice once a week. So I said, I want to practice every week until we get that song really perfect and not go on to the next one. And everyone's moaning and going, oh, that's no fun. We just want to jam. I said, I know, but we could jam later. Let's just get this one song really, really, really tight. And then we go on to the next one. And we did that. And at the time, we were able to work, and we put together a playlist of about 12 songs. And every one of those songs was perfect. And that ended up being lesson number two for my little band. And later, that evolved into a business lesson, and that was don't deliver a substandard product. While it's been said the price of perfection is bankruptcy, I believe you can come very close to perfect, generate enormous pride, and deliver incredible value by going the extra mile. See, perfection really isn't required, but supreme excellence is. So you see what I'm doing here. You know, I'm going back to my band experience, and I didn't think of these lessons back then, but I extracted them later as I started to become successful and realized to some degree a lot of these skills came from those days, the days in the rock band.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by this. I'm loving it.
Okay, good. So I also want to tell you that, you know, one time we were at a party and the mom who hired us said, hey, you know, the kids want to do a little bit more dancing. Can you play some dance songs? And we didn't really know that many dance songs. So we went back the next week and we said, well, let's practice and try and get some dance songs because people are requesting that. So we did and we tried to work on those. We went out the following week and we played a few of them and they didn't go over that well. And I realized the reason they didn't go over that well was because we didn't really love it. I mean, we didn't have our heart in it. And later in life, as I was again building my software company and then building Tony Robbins and Chet Holmes Business Breakthroughs, I realized the value of something called focus. And I'm going to quote a famous American philosopher who I know who you know of. His name is Colonel Sanders. You know Colonel Sanders, right?
Yes. I had picked a quote of his. In fact, I think his quotes.
Well, see, I only know of one of his quotes, and it was the quote that served me well over so many decades. And that quote is only four words. It's from Colonel Sanders, and it's, "We do chicken right." And yes, I am quoting the man who institutionalized focus and made it a household slogan. You know, if you think about it, you know, they don't sell hot dogs. They don't sell pizza. They sell chicken. They stayed focused on chicken. And the lesson for me was to stay focused on your passion. That's who you are. And if you stray and it's not right, go back to step one and refocus on your core strength. So as you can see, these lessons evolved all from this whole process of trying to build this little business called the band.
On the Colonel Sanders, I remember what it was that we went over. I had to think about it for a second. What we went over in was his determination at getting success was so strong that he was told no when he was pitching his Kentucky Fried Chicken and his fried chicken recipe. He was told no something like 96 or 97 times. Can you imagine?
That's right.
No, yep. no, constantly. And he persisted. And of course, the next one was history. And now it's an institution. But that just shows the focus and determination, which we're going to cover a little bit. That was what we went over earlier or last week's show.
Very cool. Very cool. So the other thing about Colonel Sanders, as you probably know, is that it wasn't until the age of 65 that he was really successful. So
that's right.
It doesn't matter how old you are. If you are determined to succeed, then absolutely you can do it. And that was I really admired him. I admired his business acumen, and I recently heard his story from Jay Abraham, great story about how Colonel Sanders was in a business meeting after he had sold his company, and he was sitting there in a conference room while the new CEO was saying that they were able to save about 5 cents per serving by removing the milk from the gravy and replacing it with water. And Colonel Sanders got up and stormed out of the room, and the CEO said to Colonel Sanders, "Where are you going?" And he says, "I'm going to get right on to ABC News tonight and tell them that this stuff isn't worth eating. It's garbage." Because he was so dedicated to preserving his recipe and making it exactly the way it had always been. And to this day.
Wow. That's amazing. That shows why it's so good. And yes, I understand that about recipes. You can change something and it just isn't the same anymore. That's amazing.
So true. So let's go back to the rock band.
Please.
I'll tell you another story. I'll tell you another story from my rock band days. And, you know, so finally at this point, we had played for free in a number of little events and at school plays and Battle of the Bands. And finally now we were starting to get customers. And someone said to us, "Well, how much do you charge?" And I didn't know what to charge. So I found out what some of the other local rock bands were charging, and I started to come in a little bit lower than them just to make sure that we would get the job. And I found out later that we were actually quite good at what we did at the age of 17, and we were starting to get into demand. So one of the things I decided to do was do a little bit of price testing. So I would raise our price by about $10 every time we got booked. And we got to the point, now remember, this is 1969 or so, and we were charging $500 a night for us to play at a Sweet 16 or a party. And for a couple of kids, that was a lot of money back then.
That's an amazing story, Mitch. I'm impressed.
Well, think about it, though. I mean, here's what. The lesson was that I kept raising the price until I figured out that we couldn't go any higher. So lesson number four became honestly assess your true worth and then begin with price experiments to find your ideal price. And by raising prices slowly and adding more value and never stop experimenting, that's how you find what the optimum price is for you and your services at that moment in time. And then just keep trying it every so often to see if you can get a little bit more each time and raise your prices as needed. So, again, all back to the Rock Band. Lesson number 6 that I'm about to tell you about was one of the most fun lessons of all. And back when we were playing, and now at this point we've been playing for a year, and the word is kind of getting out there. We were written up in a local newspaper, and we got a call from the Democratic, the person who was organizing the New York Democratic Committee or convention, and asked if we would play for the convention on a cruise boat in the harbor. So I said, absolutely. And from that, I realized that all I had to do was call up local newspapers and tell them about where we'd be playing. And they would write about us. And I found that there was almost no limit to the number of people that I could make a quick phone call or send a letter, because remember, there was no faxes or emails back then, and they would be able to tell us. They would be able to tell their audience where we were. So that became lesson number 6, which was spread the word. Do not discount the value of simple acts like publicity. And these days, blog posts lead to great SEO for our, you know, for our websites, and are easier than ever before. Even being on a show like this, this is what publicity is about. So for me, again, all this stuff came to me. I mean, it evolved as I built this little band, and for me, those became the real lessons of how to start a business and grow a business at a very early
age. Wow, that's very impressive. You're quite the businessman. I love it. Now, can you tell me how that relates, or are you not yet ready to bring it on, how that relates with the Invisible Organization?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Well, let me ask you questions. Now, tell me if this sounds familiar. Remember thinking, I'm missing something in my business, that something that will cause my business to be prosperous, and I don't know where to find it. You know, what am I not seeing? Have you ever had a thought like that?
Oh, no, that's never happened to me. Oh, yes.
Right? So
yes.
The thing about it, though, is when you're reading the first section of The Invisible Organization, this is what you will learn. It's a whole new way of looking at marketing and sales, really, from a different dimension, which in turn causes you to create new ideas and new plans and be the driving force for success. Now, here's a great example. Let's talk about Sam. He's one of our readers. Sam was the CEO of a small but growing company. He sold like all different types of products for people who wanted to learn how to grow their, I think he was selling them for chiropractic, they're learning how to grow their practice. And at first, Sam, he did actually pretty good. He got some publicity for his new company, and money started to come in. The problem was that over time, Sam had hired a bunch of people and added a lot of expenses, and now his profits were dropping because of what he was spending, and now his profits were slowly slipping away. So the weight of his solutions were now too much to support. They became his problem. But it was when Sam found the section about how he could rid his company of overhead and expenses, yet still make the money he needed and more, this returned his company to the profit maker that he once had just by doing one thing. Now get this, Tony, by going invisible. You see, he sent his staff to work at home, so he no longer needed a lot of the real estate or the expenses connected with it, other than the office itself. So now his staff worked harder, and they were happier because they got to spend much more time working from home. They spent less money to go to work, which means, actually, guess what? They got a raise. So Sam was happy, profits started to grow, and using the marketing ideas in the Invisible Organization, he orchestrated one of the most dramatic increases in revenue since the early days. And that's really just one example. There are so many more in the Invisible Organizations. And that's really what he did. He cut his costs that became
I love it. Very smart. Tell us more, please. It's very interesting.
Well, okay. Well, here's what you're going to discover. When you shift your perspective, you will move way beyond what you thought was possible. I guarantee that you're going to discover the secrets to delivering more value in what you already offer to your target client. See, so many businesses have found that it's much easier than they thought just by using the lesson on the CEO mindset, which is the first section of the book. You see, you can begin immediately by honing your skills you actually do every day and make this one change. Now, here's another example. And I think it's in the first section you learn about the mindset of the CEO, how the CEO thinks. Now, that's the difference. That's the game changer. And all of this starts with the idea, I want to create a virtual company. I want to save money by moving all of my expenses into the profit zone instead of the expense zone. Does that make sense to you?
Sure. Complete sense. Very smart, and I think it's the way of the world, but it can definitely use a lot more organization and codifying and putting together, which I believe your book does. That's very good.
That's very right. And so let's say somebody on this who's listening to this show has a sales force, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the traditional sales force operates out of a building, and maybe they have a cubicle, and they have a phone, and they have a chair and a desk, and maybe a bunch of office supplies, and there's a rug under their seat, their chair, and there's a room, and there's probably a bunch of phones and a phone equipment. There may be a closet filled with phone equipment. Well, in the Invisible Organization, I show our readers how to eliminate all of that overhead and shift all of what that would have cost or does cost into the profit zone simply by inviting all of your telephone staff to work from home. But you can't just send people home. You must have the systems in place to track, manage, and help your sales staff be more productive. So in the book, you're going to learn to move through these challenges that normally hold you back and how to make the absolute most out of your marketing. And I'm going to give you an example. There's a guy, he happens to be a reader, his name is Robert. And Robert's a carpet cleaner out on Long Island. And he was 36 years old when he started the business. That's what he told me. The problem was that over the years, he watched his competitors took a lot of his market share. You know, he was slowly losing the business he built over the last 7 years. Then, in the chapter about virtual sales, which is a little bit what I was talking about before, he discovered how to hire salespeople practically for free. Using just this one chapter, he put a small sales force together, working from their own homes, and he regained market share in just 6 months. Why? Because he didn't have the expense, as I said earlier, of supporting his sales force. He didn't have to rent space for them. So he learned, number one, how to recognize the flow of prospects and clients, and number two, to better manage his fleet of trucks through, and listen to this, with simple automated systems. He was able to see solutions he didn't see before, all by understanding how the invisible organization works, even for a carpet cleaner in Long Island. Now, what seemed hard or elusive before was completely clear because he made the invisible visible. What's the one thing you want visible in your business? More money, of course. That's what's possible. Those are the solutions you'll find.
That's wonderful. I love it. Yes, we all want to see more money. That should not be invisible. Absolutely. Now,
exactly.
So and you've touched upon this very lightly, but with all the staff at home, mm-hmm. How can a business apply this to their sales force? Because they've got to be able to see these people, monitor them, track them, and so forth. So how does that fit, please?
Well, here's how it fits. There are systems out there that most people are unaware of. Remember before I spoke about that closet filled with equipment? Well, I had a closet just like that at Time Slips Corporation, and that closet cost me about $300,000. And that closet was filled with humming and buzzing electronics that controlled all of my phone calls, that monitored everybody who was waiting on hold, that queued up my calls and did all this fancy stuff. And the fact of the matter is that not only did I have to buy the equipment, but I had to maintain it. And when it broke down, I had to fix it, and I had to pay to fix it. And I had to make sure that all of that equipment was powered by electricity, which happened to cost a small fortune. And I had to keep that room air-conditioned, again, using expensive air conditioning and electricity that cost a lot of money. You see, so all of those things today operate from the cloud. Now, what is the cloud? I'm sure everybody who's listening has heard the term the cloud. Well, let me tell you something. It's just a marketing term. The cloud is nothing more than a file server. It's just a computer that's sitting somewhere in the world connected to the internet. Well, imagine if your entire phone system is sitting in the cloud, and all your salespeople have to do is connect through the internet to this magic system in the cloud called a virtual call center, and it does the same thing that entire closet full of equipment does now. And it's very, very inexpensive. A system like that for about 50 people might only cost maybe $1,500 a month at the most for 50 people. Compared to what you would have spent on rent and expenses, that's a bargain. Does that make it a little bit more clear?
Yes, tens and tens of thousands. When I was left, for as long as I can recall in the corporate world when I was there, they had that expensive with the AC on and all the cables and all the equipment and a whole staff to operate it. It's enormous expenses. I remember that so well. Yeah, it all
exactly.
Can be done away with. Now, if done right, done smartly, done properly, it can be done away with and increase the profitability. There's an accent on doing it right, though. It just can't just run out there and just throw it together. You have to know what you're doing to make it successful and keep your business going.
Exactly. Exactly. And so what this comes down to, and again, I've said it before and I'm going to repeat it again, it comes down to the mindset of the CEO. If the CEO is in a position, the business owner is in a position to want to do this and then spend the time to learn how they could use the invisible organization as the starting point and see all of the pieces. Now, let me talk to you about another one of my readers. Her name was Linda. And she owned a small commercial cleaning company out of Des Moines. And, like many of us, she started really with no money, just a cell phone and I think maybe $50 worth of cleaning supplies. But 7 years later, she had over 50 people cleaning nearly 75,000 square feet of office space every week. But, you see, the problem was is that, and this goes back to what I said a minute ago, she was stuck in her old way of thinking, which was costing her money and her profits. But someone referred her to the book, The Invisible Organization, and after reading section 2 on how to quickly shift your perspective, she saw opportunities she had never seen before. See, she realized the visible after reading the section about building a virtual sales and customer service team that she could easily add new services and rapidly expand her marketing using the very simple but powerful organizational tools that I show you directly inside the invisible organization. So you might even call this the Russo visibility system, you see, because what she saw, what it was that held her back, and more importantly, what to do about it, the actual steps to take to move her forward. And once those barriers were removed, she became aware of the opportunities that she just couldn't see. She didn't recognize. All of a sudden, she got clarity where only indecision and stress existed before. That's what the invisible organization.
That is so cool to see a book be able to create such effects and impacts on people by showing them and stimulating them and getting them to experiment or check out new things like that. That is very cool.
I agree.
I'm zoned in. Now, I got it on the Salesforce. We talked about can apply. What about a mm-hmm. How would that fit into this, please?
Sure. So, see, the thing about any team that comes to their office every day and puts on their headset and sits in their cubicle and starts taking calls from customers, anytime you have a situation like that, and I'm talking about real estate offices, I'm talking about any appointment setting organizations, I'm talking about sales organizations, customer service organizations, I'm even talking about airlines. So listen
wow.
carefully here, Tony, because this is how powerful this is. Did you know that every time you call JetBlue or Southwest Airlines and speak to a live operator, you're talking to someone who's sitting at home?
No, I didn't know that. That's astounding.
It is. Because, see, that's the power of what a virtual organization can do. So not that the airlines have a problem making money these days, I'm sure you're aware of. but let me tell you.
Absolutely.
The idea of being able to take a call center, and you know how big those call centers are for, say, an airline. It's got to be hundreds of people, if not many hundreds of people. Well, imagine taking all that real estate and completely disposing of it, either repurposing it or selling it, and then gifting your delight of being able to work from home. Now, the systems in place that we talked about earlier are the same systems that keep these folks as productive or more productive than they've ever been before.
That is very cool, because that is the whole key of the thing. Because once people are at home, as you know, historically, maybe not now with your system, but otherwise, there's distractions abounding. There's people coming to the door. There's things happening. There's service, kids. There's pets. Everything. So how does your system, or what do you have in place that can keep that person, you know, on it, and doing the work?
Well, here's what it comes down to. Honestly, what it comes down to is, as I said before, having the right systems. So, and I'll describe how this works so that you can get a better picture of it. If you happen to work from home and you work for an airline or you work for a customer service desk, which I think is the example you asked me about, at that point in time, you log in to start work. And you may log in at 9:03 a.m. You sit down at your computer and you log in. Now the system is sending you customer service calls. And you're taking those calls, and just like you would at work, you have a headset on and you're sitting in front of your computer all alone in your kitchen maybe, and you know the dog is locked up in the back room and your husband is at work, the kids are at school, and you're just sitting there taking phone calls, and you could go for 35 or 40, 45 minutes and you realize, hey, I've got to walk the dog. So what do? You log off anytime you want. You go walk the dog. You make yourself a cup of coffee. You check the news. Then 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later, whatever you want, you then go back on and log back on. Now, all of a sudden, as soon as you log on, call. The phone starts ringing. You answer the calls for as many times or as long as you need to, and then you log off again when you don't want to. Now, can you trick the system? You know, people have tried, but what it comes down to is that the system is so smart and has seen just about every possible work avoidance method imaginable, that these systems are expert at helping managers know exactly what's going on inside their organization. In fact, they're better at helping managers manage a call center than if they were literally standing right next to the person. That's the power of the type of systems that I describe in the
That's very cool, Mitch. Does your company provide or you recommend systems?
I recommend systems. You might think of us as a clearinghouse. See, we don't have favorites. We review many, many different systems in many different categories. And when you buy the book and you go to the website, theinvisibleorganization.com, you have access to the resource center. And the resource center is where I take all of the information in the book and keep it constantly up to date. So the book was published in June. Well, wait a second, what happens about new software that came out in July or August? Well, that's constantly being reviewed by my staff and updated inside of the virtual, inside of the back end, the resource center of the website. So whenever you need a product, when the book refers to, of say, a virtual call center, at that point you read what the book says, and then you go to the site and you find out if there's anything newer available or if anyone on my staff or myself has something to say about the particular field that you're interested in. You see, it's all about really, if I could tell you to you a different way, it comes down to really knowing what to ask. You see, and if you read The Invisible Organizations, you'll learn how to ask the right questions, because the right questions can keep you focused on your goal, as opposed to getting the right answers to the wrong questions that keep you stuck repeating the same old patterns. And, you know, God, we've all been stuck in that, and it just leaves us empty at the end of the day. So, you know, everything I've told you, all the people that I've related stories about, these are folks who found solutions by opening up their mind and asking great questions. And, you know, all the people who we were talking about, even before they read the book, they had their hearts in the right place. They were all hardworking leaders, and they cared a lot for their people and their staff. But most of them really never understood the power of working virtually in any size company. And that's because they didn't know the right questions to answer. And it worked for them. I mean, they got the book, they discovered for them what the right questions were, and their mind was open to what was possible when looking at a company from the perspective that I bring to the table in my book, The Invisible Organization.
I love on your website. It's not just a website about the book. What you said is this is a website with resources of where to go, commentaries and blogs, I presume, about the latest and greatest or better software and so forth. It's a full resource center.
Exactly.
Oh, exactly. I love it. That's awesome. And
yep.
That's it. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. It's just a little bit of a – the fact is that not everybody can just go there. Only those who are committed to buying the book and learning. That's the ones that I cater the site to.
Makes perfect sense. I'm all down for that. That's good. Now, so the business growth, you made a before the show, you talked about business growth coming from within. Could you comment and give some more information about that, please?
Yes. There are people, I think most of us, who have good intentions, and we start in a direction, and we pull back, maybe we dip our toe in the water, and you know, for many reasons, that's why most CEOs who try to go virtual fail. You see, they simply don't realize that their own mindset is what is holding the company back, and I agree, this is not intuitive, I realize that, which is why I spend the first 25% of the book, The Invisible Organization, working first on the mindset of the CEO. And so you can skip the years of asking bad questions and making wrong assumptions that I did. And I know for many of you listening to this now, you might even think this is impossible or that this doesn't apply to your business. You know, and in a sense, I wasn't sure myself that what I had learned would work for others. But it wasn't until I watched as others applied the ideas, the concepts, and the processes in The Invisible Organization to their real life that it became real to me as well. So from my perspective, I can now see what they didn't see before. And sometimes, and this gets back to your question, all people need are a little bit, it's just a little bit of assurance that you're headed in the right direction. And The Invisible Organization provides, I think, a rather refreshing new slant on growing a business to double, redouble, and maybe even double again.
Oh, I love it. Very provocative and stimulating, and completely agree. I like that you really take over from the point of view of the mindset. You really get into that and really sort that out, because, yes, it is the first thing. As a matter of fact, what I want to talk about next ties completely in with that and some of the stuff. I'd like to talk a little bit about willpower, which is something I do new now on the show at this time on the show. I want to talk about what makes you tick, Mitch. Now, we talked about some of the aspects earlier, but you know, you and I, we see too many people, they fail at something. They don't keep at it. They stop. They don't persist. They go off and they try something different. So in terms of you personally, I have a couple of questions. I want to know, what keeps you going? What makes you keep on no matter what, regardless of life's failures, you know, big or small? A quote, you mentioned a quote earlier, maybe is that what it is that goes through your head? Could you give us some final insights on your successful world, please?
Sure. And I guess from the perspective of willpower is what you're saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going to go back again to my band, you know. I mean, we're all driven by something. And I believe the word for that is passion. And it really comes down to, where is your passion? I know people who will tell you that I don't have passion for anything or anyone. Yeah, I love my kids and all that, but I have no passion in my life. Well, I think part of what really works for a lot of folks is when they feel that is to go back to their roots and discover what it was they were passionate about when they were young. And, you know, for me, I was a person, maybe I was gifted with the ability to get excited about things. I happen to have what you might call an obsessive personality. So even as a little boy, when I got interested in something, I didn't just get interested in it, I got obsessed with it. And I did. I got obsessed with several things. And sometimes as a child, I kind of moved from thing to thing. But the power of willpower for me was this feeling of being obsessed, this feeling of this unquenchable desire. And it depends on where that comes from. So I have, from a success standpoint, I have the desire to live a life of my dreams. And if I could put it that way, the simplest way I could, to live the life of my dreams. And to me, that means freedom. To me, that means control of my own destiny. And it doesn't mean that I have to be the richest person in the world or the smartest person in the world, but it does mean to me that I need to stay in control of what I know I need to be happy. And for me to be happy, I need to have something that I'm passionate about, something that drives me, that gets me to wake up every morning and want to go do just that. And it may not even be one thing. It might be many things. One thing that many people don't know about me is that I happen to be an award-winning photographer, and I travel the world with my camera. And I do this not for money, because nobody ever pays me to take pictures. I do it because I love it. I do it because it's one of my passions. And this passion balances out my business passion. It's because I'm so passionate about business, and it's so passionate about, really for me, is helping people and helping clients, that I need to offset that with a different passion every so often, which is why I go disappear, get on a plane, end up in a foreign country thousands of miles away, not to be seen or heard from for several weeks. Because that's how I disconnect, and that's one of my passions. I'm not sure that's the exact answer to your question.
Oh, that's a great answer. I love it. I dig it completely. I zone in the things too, and I totally can see that and see how that get into something and just take right off with it. And you keep, that's what makes you successful. And that sets us apart, I think, those that succeed, because one doesn't always necessarily win right away the first time. One has to keep on it. And it's that passion that drives one through to the eventual success. So no, I love that. That's great.
Cool. I'll relate a lesson that I learned again, as a young man. I was doing some manual labor. I was emptying a warehouse, and it turns out that many years ago, I was emptying this warehouse, and we were just about done, and the owner shows up, and everyone got into the contractor's car, and I was the only one left, so he says, come on, ride with me. And this is the owner of the company. So I'm riding around with this guy, and I didn't realize who I was with. I was with the CEO of the Hoover Vacuum Company. And it took a minute, but once I realized that I was with this guy, the guy who started, built, and grew the Hoover Vacuum Company, I said to him, you know, well, what is your, you got to tell me, what's your secret? How did you build such a great company? And he said, you know, the one thing my dad told me, and he's relating the story, he goes, the one thing my dad told me is that you never fail until you stop doing it. I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, you know when you start to do something, let's say you get a paper out, and you do it for about 2 or 3 weeks, and you're barely making any money, doesn't seem to be working very well, so you decide you don't want to do it anymore. Well, it's when you decided not to do it anymore that you failed. But what happens if you kept doing it and kept doing it and kept doing it? Do you think you would still be a failure if you kept doing it? And I said, well, probably not. He goes, that's right. Because the only time you truly fail is when you admit defeat and give up.
I love that.
Yeah. That was so pivotal to me understanding what made successful people tick.
I love that. I think that's one of the best quotes I've heard in a long time. I love that one. And speaking of quotes, I pulled some inspirational quotes from some famous people about success and so forth, and I'd like to read them out and have your comments on them. And this is very insightful. It really opens up revenue and what makes a successful person tick and so forth. And so I'd like to go into that now. And since we talked to Tony Robbins at the very beginning and throughout this show a couple of times, I think it's only fair and fitting. I'll start with one of his quotes. He said, I discovered a long time ago that if I helped enough people get what they wanted, I would always get what I wanted, and I would never have to worry.
Yeah, that's a famous quote. That's a quote attributed to Tony for many, many years. And you know, it's so true. He is a person. But I think the quote is, in a sense, a misunderstanding of who Tony is. I know Tony well. We've worked together for years. Tony doesn't really care about getting for himself in many ways. He already has. I mean, Tony has had for himself, quote unquote, for many years. Tony cares about helping. And I remember once I was sharing a story with Tony about how my family goes every Thanksgiving to a homeless shelter and serves food. And I was proud. I was saying to Tony, hey, Tony, I just want to let you know that's where I'll be this weekend. And, you know, and we happen to sponsor that. We probably are sponsoring, you know, maybe 100 or 150 meals. And Tony says, Mitch, that's really great. I just want to tell you that I happen to serve over 1 million meals every Thanksgiving through my charitable organization. So I felt like about an inch high at that point. But the point
wow.
is that Tony doesn't do it because he wants anything from it. He wants to help people. And when you come from a place of wanting to help, then inevitably, and maybe even eventually, if it doesn't happen immediately, you will have the biggest gain of all. From helping others is where the greatest joy and satisfaction comes from. So, and by the way, since we're talking about Tony Robbins, can I tell you a little bit about Tony and him building a virtual organization?
I think that would be fantastic. Please go ahead, Mitch.
So, you know, sure. So we got involved with Tony early on, and I mean, certainly Tony Robbins had a huge facility and had a lot of people, but after understanding the power of building a virtual organization, he was able to save about $1 million in year two of his transition to sending his teams home to work. Now, I mean, can you imagine what it would be like if you were able to do that too? You see, this is not just a casual concept or a business case to read. This is something you can do, even if you're 12 people. So if you're not yet at that stage of growth where you can save a lot of money, why not use the simple blueprint that you will find in my book, The Invisible Organization, and build a sleek, efficient company with staff and clients who love you, just because they're getting exactly what they need and nothing more. You see, that's the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. You get to walk away with the tools and knowledge to gain that certain something, that something more that you always knew was there but could never find. And that's kind of what I love to do. That's why, look, you and I both know that we don't make money from books. The reason I write this book is because I have it inside of me to give, and I want to make sure that somewhere somebody benefits from reading this book. Maybe not so much the CEO who makes a lot of money. Yeah, of course I want that person to benefit. Yeah, I want to help them benefit. But I really want to help. I want to help all of those people who have to drive to work every day because they have to. Not because they want to, because they have to have that job. And I think that there's something that could be gained by sending all of those people home, by saving all that money in gasoline, although gas is pretty cheap these days, you know, by saving all of that hassle of being on the highway and all the accidents and all the carbon monoxide. That, to me, is my bigger purpose.
I love that. I'm all for that. Mitch, how can people find out more about your book? They just go to theinvisibleorganization.com, or is there anything else that we can help them with?
No, that's it. They can go to Amazon or they can go to theinvisibleorganization.com. But just be sure to visit the site after you buy the book, because that's how you get access to the Resource Center. And the Resource Center is sort of, like I said before, a continuation of the book with many, many more features than beyond what the book offers, interviews, everything. So for everybody who's listening, I really hope that this made a difference to you, and I hope it got you thinking about what you could be if you were to apply some of the ideas that we talked about in this interview.
Sounds fantastic. And we have a couple more minutes. If you wouldn't mind, I have a couple more quotes from successful and famous people, and pick your brain some more on that.
Sure.
We talked on this next one a little bit similar to what Mr. Hoover said, but this is different. This is from Thomas Edison, who said, "I have not failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that won't work."
Exactly. So first of all, you know, Thomas Edison has a very special place in my heart because as a little boy, I became fascinated with his life, and I borrowed every book at the Sheepshead Bay Library in Brooklyn, New York, until they ran out of books on Thomas Edison, and my mom had to go to the library to have them order more books and find more references for his life. But you know something, if anything, that was one of the qualities I admired most about this man, is that he tried thousands and thousands of elements for the filament of a light bulb until he discovered tungsten. And he never, ever, ever saw it as a failure. He simply saw it as knowing one more thing that doesn't work. And that's how he spent his life. And, I mean, later in life, he got embroiled in political issues, and he got involved with the RCA Corporation. But you know, I mean, he was responsible for so much of the way our lives are today. He invented things that to this day we still use, and for that, you know, we can only be grateful to a person who really set the tone for what an inventor should be in America, and that's why I loved his life so much.
Wow, I'm very impressed at your passion and about Thomas Edison and your knowledge of him. That's incredible, because he's done so well. He's one of the top patent holders of all time. I know Benjamin Franklin was. I know Tesla was. Thomas Edison, tons of patents. That's incredible.
That he was prolific as an inventor.
Very much. Another one here is Mark Twain, who said, 20 years from now, you will be more disappointed by the things that you didn't do than by the ones that you did do.
Ah, that's such a great quote as well. And I think what that comes down to is I think that addresses the fear we all have of being more than we are. The fear or the concern we have of embarrassing ourselves, the fear of taking that bold step and going forward. Because in the end, it's those are the times that we regret, not the things that we remember. And that's why that quote is so powerful, because it reminds us that these are the moments today, right now. Taking action today will probably determine who you are tomorrow and what you are tomorrow. So we never regret the things that we try. We only regret the things we don't. And I love that quote.
It's awesome. I'm blown away. This has been such a great show. We've gone over so many great points. I just love it. And we're kind of close to wrapping up. So let me ask you, is there anything else you would like our audience to know about or tell them or anything, please?
Well, I guess I'll just make one more comment about the topic, you know, and I think it's for anyone who has a desire to find the solution to the problem of slow growth, low profits, or unhappy staff, will walk away with the gift of now knowing how to fix almost any company using the simple step-by-step tools inside of the invisible organization. And now you will never depend on anyone to grow your company ever again. And that's really all I want to leave the listeners with, is that, you know, I think that this is one of the opportunities of life. This is a moment. Let's seize this moment. You know that 20 years from now, most businesses will probably have adapted this already in one form or another. Well, how about doing it now? How about making more profits now? How about moving? How about taking that first step and moving forward to improve your life and, by the way, the lives of all the families of the people who work for you? So that's what I'd like to end on, if that's okay.
Totally okay. Well, that's been excellent, and I want to thank you very much, Mitch, for being on our show and giving us your insights and your stories. I love your stories. I want more.
Read the book.
I will. It's, again, good. Quite a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you very much, Mitch Russo. Thank you. All right. Well, once again, Mitch's website is theinvisibleorganization.com. Okay. Well, thank you again, everyone, and stay tuned to our next one, Revenue Chat. We're going to have Dr. Jared Dupree, author of Whole Fit Wellness for Life. He's an innovative thinker who relies on theories and applications derived from the social sciences, economics, and business. Equally, he values spirituality, the experience of others, and the classics to contribute to his ongoing learning. His company provides over 10,000 hours of service each year and only continues to grow. Dr. Dupree shares his insights on how you can live well as an individual, family, and a business on the next episode of Revenue Chat. This is Tony D'Urso, brought to you by Easy Sales Procedures. Get the book, Easy Sales Procedures, for you and all your business contacts at TonyDURSO.com. All right. Thanks again, everyone. And until next time, remember, you can make life better for yourself and everyone. Choose wisely. Hi, this is Tony D'Urso, author of the new book, Easy Sales Procedures. You know, in my career, I've made impressive record-breaking sales forays into real estate, collectibles, insurance technology, and other varied industries. My accomplishments include raising $3.25 million in a six-month period. Now, despite what we've been told, sales is an art. There are sales procedures that can be applied precisely as a science, but in essence, it's truly an art. There are fundamentals that you need in place that will help you with your sales, marketing, and business. Get Easy Sales Procedures to help put your business into proper perspective. You know, too many people seem to make sales complicated. Hey, it's easy. All you need are some basics and three words: open, agree, and get. That's it. That's EasySalesProcedures.com. This book will endow you with the simple truths at the core of being a sales master, and also contains salesman training drills that, when practiced, demonstrate how to interest any person in anything. These simple procedures can be applied by anyone from any walk of life, because in modern day society, every person is involved in interesting or selling someone something. That's Easy Sales Procedures. Get your copies now at a low price from EasySalesProcedures.com. Order enough for all your employees, too. Here's to volume sales success for your life and business.